So, welcome to our second instalment on NGL in Focus. Thank you very much for joining us again. This month, we are very excited to welcome Gabby Salazar to the NGL in Focus blog. As you know, she's written an article for us about environmental responsibility and photography in the classroom. And as a young National Geographic Explorer and a photographer, we are very pleased to be chatting to her today. So Gabby, thank you again for joining us. And to start off with, what do you think, in your opinion, it means to be environmentally responsible?
Oh, it's a great question, and it's one I think about all the time. And so, I mean, I think just a concise definition is I think that we act in such a way that we protect the earth for future generations of humans and non-human animals. So not just for ourselves, but for all of the creatures that we share this amazing planet with. And so, you know, what does that mean? Like, how do we actually do that, I think, is the question, because that seems like such a big ask.
Yeah.
You know?
Very big.
Yeah. What do we do for elephants? What do we do for lions? And so I think those are both really important species that we should be thinking about, you know, groups. But I really think about it as, what can I do in my daily life to make a difference for the planet? And there's actually an amazing number of things that we can do to kind of reduce our footprint or tread a little more lightly on the earth. So I think the thing that we're most frequently told is to recycle, which is a great thing to do. We should definitely be recycling as much as we can, our paper, our plastic, our glass bottles. But for me, the more important of the three R's, reduce, reuse, and recycle, are to reduce and reuse. And I think about that a lot. Like, I don't buy as many new things, you know. I make sure that I'm reusing my water bottle. I have a refillable water bottle that I take around with me. You know, I think we could end up, you know, individually in some countries, we're using 200, 300 plastic water bottles or more per year, per person. So think about, just by reusing your reusable water bottle, that's an incredible contribution you're making by not putting those 300 bottles into recycling or into landfills. And, you know, recycling, which is wonderful, still takes a lot of energy. So it's not just, you know, I toss it into the recycling bin and it goes away. We have to use energy to melt down that plastic and to create new bottles. And so thinking about how you can reduce and reuse are important things. I think I also think about how I can do that locally in my neighborhood. I can be environmentally responsible in my community. So one of the things that I've done recently is redone my backyard with all native plants. So, you know, plants tend to grow in certain places around the world, and they're native or endemic. Endemic plants are only found in a certain place, endemic species. So you might have species that are endemic to a small island and they're found nowhere else. Like in Madagascar, almost all of their plants, I mean, a huge proportion, are endemic to that island and found nowhere else on the planet. And so where I live in Bethesda, Maryland, which is near Washington, D.C., we researched what plants are from this area. And we took out all the plants from other places. We put in native plants. And we've had so many more amazing species coming into our garden. Like we've never seen a couple of different, you know, warbler species, which are small birds. They've never been in the backyard before, and they've been coming in because they've got little fruits to eat that they like and that are found in their neighborhood. We've also had rabbits and raccoons now, which is so neat. So there's all of these little things, that actions that we can take in our daily lives to make a difference for the planet. And I also think that we should focus on protecting things locally, right? Like, I think about it as, you know, I have this special place that I went to when I was little near my home where I grew up. And that's kind of like my place in nature, right? When I think about a happy place that I want to go to, it's like this little stream that was near my grandmother's house. And I think if we all protected and helped clean up, pick up litter, helped look after our special places in nature all around the world, we don't need to focus on conservation far away from us. If we all did our little part in our little part of the world, we could make a huge difference globally. So for me, that's really what environmental responsibility is about.
Mm-hmm. I think that's something a lot of people could relate to, as well as I'm sure everyone has their own place in nature. And actually, you're right. If everyone looked after that small part, then it becomes a much bigger project without even trying.
Absolutely.
Nice. And so you talk in your article a lot about using photography, teaching natural history, science, and environmental education to students. So how do you think this can be integrated into teaching English?
Yeah, so photography is such an amazing tool because, you know, we all really have cameras in our pockets these days. So you don't have to have I said this, I think, in my article, you don't have to have a big professional camera to be a photographer. You can just use your camera phone or, you know, a tiny camera that you can carry around in your pocket. And I think that in the classroom, if you do have access to cameras, there's a couple of ways you can teach English with photography. So with younger students, I love to do kind of an A to Z scavenger hunt. So can you go around and find all of the letters in the alphabet or as many as possible, either in nature or in the classroom? If you're limited to being within your classroom, you know, they can look on books, they can look on shelves, they can look on signs. And it's a great way to get students thinking creatively, but also to thinking about the shapes of those letters and learning those letters. With older students, you can actually look at doing more of a photo scavenger hunt. So giving them a list of different words, some of which might be more challenging English words, that they have to go out and actually find those things in the classroom or out in nature and take photos of them. And then create a little booklet where they actually write out those words to label those photographs. And that's just a way to kind of re-emphasize those words through different steps of the process and the project. One of the other things that I love to do with students is to actually use photographs, printed photographs, to inspire them to write. And that's a great way to teach English. So one project that I did with a group of college students one time actually was I used some of my images of nature and gave them a selection of 30 or 40 of the images. And they had the assignment from their creative writing teacher to write a poem or a piece of prose or, you know, a small story inspired by that image. And what came out of that project was just amazing. Like, a lot of the images were more abstract. They might have been sunrises or sunsets or flocks of birds. And students were so imaginative. And we published a little booklet of all of that work. And it was this great creative, you know, activity and project. The other activity that I love doing, if you have maybe slightly younger students, is to actually pick, you say you have 25 students in your classroom. Pick 25 photos. You could cut them out of magazines or bring them in from home and put one on each desk in the classroom. And then students will sit down at the photo and give them, you know, a minute to write one sentence about that photo in English that inspires them. You know, it's what does it make them feel? What does it make them think of? And then you kind of play musical chairs. Everybody swaps and goes to the next desk, and then they write a sentence that inspires them. And when you do this 10 or 15 times, you end up with a 10 or 15 line poem about that image. And when you read those aloud, it's sometimes quite shocking how beautiful they are. And the students are really surprised that suddenly they've become poets. They didn't know they could write a poem, but collectively they've created this work of art. So, you know, those are some of the ways that I use English, or use photography to teach English.
Excellent. You've talked about leading workshops in gardens and parking lots. What photography advice would you maybe give to teachers who are a bit more confined to the classroom and who maybe don't have the outside space as readily available to take their pictures?
Absolutely. That's a great question. So I would emphasize, of course, that you don't have to go, if you can go outside, you don't have to go to a national park to be able to take amazing photos. So even if you can just go to the parking lot, or even if you can just go out to, you know, the back basketball court, you know, at your school or college, it really is an amazing place to take images. You can really find patterns anywhere. But if it's rainy, if you can't go outside for some reason, there's so much you can do in the classroom with photography. So one of the things that I like to do is to bring in fake flowers or even like cellophane and tin foil and different shiny objects, or recycling, even, you know, like aluminum cans and bottles, and stack them all up in a mess on tables and create little inside photography studios. And so you can tell students it's to take macro images, like close-up images. You can even use magnifying glasses sometimes and put them in front of the camera lenses. That works pretty well. And really get them to get creative and to start seeing beauty and photographs in objects that they would otherwise maybe toss in the trash or never look at again. So that's a great exercise. The other thing you can do inside is actually bring in flashlights and start playing with different types of lighting, even within a classroom. So you can use flashlights or lights to create side lighting or backlighting. Talk about taking portraits. That's a great way to experiment inside the classroom. In terms of teaching English, one of the activities that I think is really fun is to go to your school library or a local library if you have one. And hopefully you have a really patient librarian because a friend of mine told me about this. You can actually have students take books and look at the title of the book, which will be along the spine of the book, and then stack these books so their spines are facing outwards and create a poem using the titles of the books. And once you stack up enough books and create your poem by rearranging them, you can use your camera to take a photograph of all of the spines together, and then you have a photograph of your English language poem. So that's a really fun one. But like I said, check with your librarian first.
Before you go and stack up all their books.
Exactly.
That's lovely. Thank you very much for so many examples as well. Moving away maybe from teaching English, but you talk quite a lot in your article about it. What do you think are the reasons that are causing children to spend maybe more time inside on screens rather than being outside in nature?
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot, you know, there's a lot of reasons. And I'll admit, I spend a lot of time on screens as well. You know, I sometimes am amazed how many hours a day I spend on the computer. There's just, or on my, you know, my phone. There's just so much media out there. There's so much to consume. So I do think it's partially this, you know, of course, the proliferation of digital devices. They're so readily accessible, right? Which is great because it gives us all of these new opportunities for learning. But it also means it's easy to become quite addicted to the media. And there's a great author based in the United States named Richard Louv who has documented this and really called it nature deficit disorder in young people. So, you know, children not spending time outdoors and just spending time plugged in. And he's documented all kinds of effects of this, you know. And I think that it's partially having the devices and having access to them, but it's also kind of the culture that we create in society of not spending time just playing outdoors, like having free play. And I think that's important for young learners, and it's important for high schoolers as well, you know, and adults. And part of that is that I think parents, and this has been pretty well documented by different studies, are afraid of sending their kids outside. You know, they're afraid of traffic, they're afraid of, you know, kidnapping, which has been documented to not be a very, very big risk at all at this stage. But they have this, you know, fear of letting their kids out of their sight. And I can totally appreciate that, even though I'm not a parent. But I think that we have to make an effort to give our kids the opportunity to be outside and to have that free play time, because it's so critical, I think, to their emotional health, to their well-being, and to their future connection with nature. So, you know, if we don't give kids the time to fall in love with nature, they're never going to care enough in the future to want to save it, to want to be environmentally responsible and to protect it for their kids and their grandkids. And so I think it's really important that we allow ourselves space and time away from those devices to be outside and enjoy the wonders of nature. And the coolest thing, I think, you know, in my experience working with young learners and high schoolers is you think, you know, wow, these kids, they see everything on these digital devices. They see things from all around the world. Nature's not going to be that exciting. But then you get them outside. And I mean, I have been with a group of recently, I was in Washington, D.C. working on the BioBlitz with National Geographic, where they actually go out and they try to count all of the different species in Washington, D.C. parks over a couple of days. So we go out and we're near the White House and we have maybe 60 middle schoolers. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, we're never going to find any animals here, right? We're on like near the White House lawn. And it's the kids are going to be bored. And even I was worried, right? And then we start turning over rocks and we find some ants. And I hear these sixth graders erupt into screams, ants, you know, like roly-polies, a worm. Like they're so excited. And you really realize that kids don't have to see a rhinoceros in the wild to be excited about nature. They just need that opportunity to become explorers and, you know, to become scientists and to kind of discover. And I think that's really what we need to do, right? We need to give kids opportunity and the time to be kind of taken up in wonder, to discover the beauty of nature.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think it's something that we're all guilty of, no matter what age we are, about being inside. But actually, it doesn't take a lot once we are outside to realise what we're missing, I think.
Absolutely.
We have talked a little bit about different English activities for different levels of learners. But maybe teachers who are teaching older students think that they might find things a bit childish. So how do you think, do you think there are certain ways or approaches of teaching an older group of students English through photography?
Absolutely. Yes. So I work with high school students quite a bit. I love working with high school students because they're so insightful and they're really up for challenges. And so one of the things that I was working with two groups this summer, and I like giving them assignments to actually not just take individual images, but to tell a story with their images. And I think that that's something that any teacher can use. So for instance, you could ask a student to tell the story of their family. And this could be a longer-term project, not just a, you know, go home one night, but work over 1 or 2 weeks to tell the story of their family in photos. And I think, you know, photographs, the photo itself is only part of the story, right? As a photographer and a photojournalist, I also write captions that tell a little bit more depth, in a little bit more depth about the background of the photograph. And so I'll assign students to actually create a 10-image or 12-image photo story with different types of images that tell a story altogether, and then to write 3 to 4 sentence captions to accompany each image. And collectively, that should really tell the story of their family, or the story of maybe their special place in nature, or, you know, the story of their family vacation over the summer. And I think that these are great ways for students to think about English language, also narrative, you know, and how to create a compelling piece that integrates visuals and words. And so I would definitely recommend, you know, not just limiting yourself to telling the students to take one photo, but really push them to be creative, and you'll be amazed at what they come up with.
Mm-hmm. I think students can also be more motivated as well when it is their own family that they're telling the story of. Like obviously it's amazing to be able to take photos and describe, you know, sort of the outside spaces and the things that they find, but actually when it's their own personal family and they're sharing that with everyone else, I think that's something that they can be very proud of afterwards.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think we, you know, I hear this from a lot of the students that I work with. I think it's so easy to just kind of, as teachers, ask students to write about other, you know, other people or other things or other places. And high school students don't get listened to that much. You know, nobody's really like looking at them and saying, hey, tell me about your life. Like, tell me what you're experiencing. I want to hear your opinion. And I think photography and art is a great form of expression and can really bring that out of students in a way that maybe a typical assignment doesn't. And I think it's a wonderful way for us to start engaging students with visual arts, which unfortunately are often underfunded in schools and are being taken out of curriculum.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And thank you very much for all your examples. I'm sure teachers will be able to grab onto at least a few of those to take back to their classrooms. Just to finish up, because I know you must have thousands of amazing stories, but In your opinion, what is the most exciting place that you have led a photography workshop?
Oh, so I think probably one of my favorite places to lead a workshop was with a group of high school students in Malaysia. So we were near Kuala Lumpur, but we actually got to go out to a forest reserve nearby. And there were just some of the tallest trees I'd ever seen. And there was even like a little canopy walkway so you could go up into the forest canopy. And a lot of these students were from Kuala Lumpur, which is a huge city. And they told me that they'd never really been out to some of the natural areas, including this forest. And so they were just as amazed as I was as a tourist and as a, you know, a foreigner coming into this amazing natural area. And we just had the best time. I think we spent about an hour and a half out in the forest looking for patterns and looking for different species. And the students created some incredible images. But I really loved being able to use photography to connect them with a place that hopefully they'll go back to again and again and again.
Mm-hmm. I think maybe there might be a place on your doorstep. I mean, not everyone can get out to Kuala Lumpur, but I feel like there might be somewhere just as amazing just around the corner that they've maybe not noticed or thought about before.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I can just say one other quick thought is I lived in Pennsylvania for a couple of years, a state on the eastern coast of the United States. And I was working a lot with a state park that was about 10 minutes from my home. And it was really neat because we started doing these little photo workshops with students. And one of the projects we were working on was a project called Meet Your Neighbors, which was about meeting your non-human animal neighbors, like who lives under the rock, who lives in the stream near your home in the state park. And we created this photo exhibit about all of these animals that people who had visited the park for 20 years had never even noticed. And as part of this, we went out one night looking for moths. And moths are attracted to lights. So we put up a black light in the forest and a big kind of mercury vapor bright light and a big white sheet. And suddenly all of these colorful moths had flown into the light just, you know, in the parking lot of the state park. And we were able to photograph these and share these images with students. And one of them looks, we called it the pink lemonade moth because it looks like a glass of pink lemonade. And you would just never have believed that this was right there on your back, you know, doorstep. Mm-hmm. So I do think you're absolutely right. You don't have to go to Kuala Lumpur, yeah. Although you should, it's awesome. But, you know, you can go anywhere, you know, to really discover nature and to discover that wonder and to use photography. Mm-hmm. So
thank you very much. And thank you very much for giving up your time and for all your examples and personal experiences. I hope everyone listening has enjoyed it as much as I have. So thank you, everyone, for listening and for joining us on In Focus this month. And do make sure you read Gabby's article if you haven't already and join us next month back on NGL In Focus for our next instalment. Thank you.